Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with photographer Judy Cooper, whose beautiful new book is Dancing in the Streets, Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs of New Orleans. It is always a pleasure to talk about a gorgeous new book about New Orleans culture. Our city is so photogenic. And the bright spirit of Judy Cooper's Dancing in the Streets, Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs of New Orleans will lift you up. Judy is the former staff photographer of the New Orleans Museum of Art, where she worked for 15 years. She has been photographing second lines and social aid and pleasure clubs since the early 1990s. And Katrina spurred her on to finish this work and make this book, a companion volume to a recent exhibit at the Historic New Orleans Collection. Judy Cooper, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thanks so much.
Now, you got your PhD in French language and literature from Tulane, and you taught on the college level before you decided to devote yourself to photography. Now, that was a big change, and making it must have been really exciting.
Exciting and scary,
yeah.
Too. Yeah. I had a friend who was a photographer from France, and I remember asking him if he thought I could earn a living as a photographer. He lied through his teeth and said yes. It took a while, but it was a passion,
yeah.
So I just kept pursuing it.
So tell me about your first second line. And do you remember the first photograph you took when you knew you were going to get hooked on this subject and keep photographing it over and over again?
I really got tuned into this particular subject by an article in the newspaper in the Times-Picayune, a quite long article,
mm-hmm.
By a writer named Chris Gray. She interviewed Norman Dixon Sr., who is sort of the super grand marshal of the whole tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that sounds wonderful. I really want to try to photograph these people. I first found them at Jazz Fest.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the first day I went there, and it took a little bit to find them, but I did and photographed several people. And so I kept going back to Jazz Fest and met Norman Dixon. And then he was the one that sort of helped me find them on the street. But it was not easy at first.
And, of course, he's in this book a lot talking
about the
history of second lining. Now, talk about the challenges of that moment of photography. It's different, of course, if it's a jazz funeral or an anniversary parade, I would think, a bit. But you've done a lot of formal portraits, and everything in this photography is kind of moving or moments of action.
Not all of it, but because I, having gotten to know the clubs better, I have managed to go into the place where they're going to start from, where they're dressing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been able to do some, you know, more portrait-like photos inside. And I enjoy doing those, and then I give them to the club members as sort of a token of appreciation of their work. But then getting out on the street and trying to shoot them as they're dancing very energetically.
Yes.
And there are crowds of people between you and the dancers often. And so it is quite a challenge, I'll have to say.
And there are certain rules of etiquette that photographers should follow in regard to photographing second lines, one of which is you should develop relationships with club members. You should actually make friends with these subjects. So I kind of think you give us a little clue into how you did that and the dedication of this book. So talk a little bit about meeting that special person.
It was at a parade, and I remember it was the Valley of Silent Men parade, and I had gone to the beginning of where they were going to start. It was from a bar on Martin Luther King. And I remember going into the bar looking for club members and what have you. And I was there weren't many in there. I was just standing there, and this very short lady, but who was all dressed up, came over and said, "Hi, I'm CJ. Who are you?" And so I told her that I was a photographer and what have you.
You could have said, "I'm JC."
I should have. I'm sure I didn't have the wherewithal of mine to do that at the moment. But she was a member of a club. They were older ladies, and they didn't dance in the streets anymore. What they did was to ride, to get all dressed up and ride on a trolley as part of the parade. So she took me out, and I met her club members and took the picture of all of them on the trolley and gave them the photos. And just got to know CJ. She went to every parade.
Wow.
So I would, you know, go find her at every parade and talk to her. And then she started introducing me to friends of hers who also paraded, were in clubs, sometimes old clubs that were no longer parading and sometimes current clubs. And so she was one of the main people that allowed me to get to be friends with so many of the clubs.
You're just a living example of how these relationships need to be reciprocal for the best results. You have to give something back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think all the photographers that are out there now, many of whom are represented by photos in the book, do that. You know, they all are friends with club members and give them photos. And it's just a two-way street.
Now, I imagine you could easily have done a book about second lining with just your photographs. But you have represented so many New Orleans photographers in this book. So talk about gathering them to your vision of this book.
It wasn't hard.
I bet. Yeah.
And most of them are people that I run into at every parade. They're out there, too. You know, so I had gotten to know them also. And become familiar with their work. And it just seemed to me that it would be so much richer if it wasn't just my photographs. Mm-hmm. They were almost all of them more than happy to be part of the book and the exhibition. The exhibition was also made up largely of the photographs of these same photographers.
If you're just joining us, my guest is photographer Judy Cooper, author of Dancing in the Streets, Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs of New Orleans. What means more to you, the exhibit or the book? When is the work finished?
Well, that's a good question, because I intend to go back
keep
out there
on doing it. So,
yeah, as soon as the parades resume. For me, the book is sort of my crowning achievement, if you will, you know, because the thing I like about the book is that it's not just the photographs, that it's the story. And it took me several years of photographing the parades, but the more I got to know the people and began to hear about the history, which is very long, goes back to the mid-19th century, and is complex. So I thought, well, you know, there needs to be a book about this tradition, this culture. Mine is not the only one. There have been others, and some that have come out fairly recently, you know, that talk about the same tradition.
Now, you draw on a real all-star team of scholars for this. And you start with Freddie Evans talking about Congo Square and the very roots of second-line parading. And she's one of our great scholars of life here, don't you think?
Yes, yes. I had met Freddie actually at NOMA because when they had a big African exhibit, her book on Congo Square had just come out, and they had her come and speak at NOMA. So I had met her and read the book and was very impressed with it. So many of the second line people trace their origins back to Congo Square.
Right.
You know, and the fact that Congo Square happened on Sunday and that it very much included dancing. So I thought, well, you know, it would be good to give that, to have something on Congo Square as a glimpse of that past, that long past. You know. And Freddie was happy to write an essay.
And then you have a whole chapter just on the dancing by Rachel Carrico. So talk a little bit about the dancing that we see on the streets.
Well, there is a sort of a special second line step that I have never been able to master because it is very fast. It's some fast footwork.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel talks about that, and she names the step. She knows.
Yeah.
Not only is she a scholar, she has a PhD in dance studies, she is a member of a second line group. She's a member of the Ice Divas and comes to town every year to be in their parade. So she knows what she's talking about.
And I love the names. I love Ice Divas. That's such a great name. And then one of the things I especially like in this book is that you include the root sheets. To me, those are like little pieces of folk art. You know, they're illustrated, and talk about that.
Well, those route sheets were initially the way you found where a parade was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But to find a parade, you had to go to a parade. And the people that were going to parade the next Sunday and maybe even the Sunday after that would have the route sheets made up and hand them out to everybody. So when the next week rolled around, you knew where to go because these parades are all over town.
Yeah.
They're not like Mardi Gras parades where they're mostly on St. Charles or, you know, or Canal or whatever. They're all over town. So you have to have the route sheet or to have talked to some member of the club and know where they're going to start.
It's a very New Orleansy kind of thing, isn't it? have to know somebody.
You have to know somebody. That's right.
Now, talk a little bit about the past year without second lining. You have a piece in this book about that that I think will really capture a lot of hearts.
When the pandemic first started, everything stopped in terms of the book. And I thought, oh, heavens, this might be the death of the book. You know, what are we going to do? But then Jessica Dorman assured me that, no, it wasn't the death of the book. We're on pause. And so I started thinking, well, you know, as time went on, we need to talk about this. Because if to publish a book that acts like it never happened, it would be silly. So I started calling presidents of clubs that, you know, I knew quite a few of them. They're friends. So I would call them and say, how are you doing? How is the club doing? And they mostly reassured me that everything was okay. There haven't been a whole lot of deaths from COVID, except a couple of two or three that were at the very beginning and really tragic. Ronald Lewis, who was one of the real old-timers, leaders of the whole thing, has a nice little museum called the House of Dance and Feathers, had published a book called The House of Dance and Feathers. Yeah. So he was a very important person in the tradition, and he died very early from COVID.
Right.
So that was a great
so
loss.
So beloved.
Yes.
Such a beloved
yes.
person. And then Sylvester Francis as
yes,
well.
Yes, but he did not die of COVID. He had been ill for years, but he died of a burst appendix of all the things. They did have a somewhat of a jazz funeral for him, somewhat, but with certain limitations. But back to the treatment of the pandemic. I had known Action Jackson from WWOZ for a good while, and actually it was Molly Cleaver, who was my editor, had the idea of getting Action to interview some people and to publish his interviews, interview people about their, right. the COVID and how it was affecting the clubs, and to publish it and include it in the book. So it is the epilogue to the book. It worked out beautifully.
And it's so much fun to read. Because when you read it, you can hear his voice. Because we're so used to hearing him on WWOZ.
Right,
it's your boy, Action Jackson.
Yes,
you know,
it's
just
your boy, yeah.
So great. If you're just joining us, my guest is photographer Judy Cooper, author of Dancing in the Streets, Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs of New Orleans. One of the things you've done in this book that's so lovely is that we kind of go the full arc of the experience. Like near the beginning, you talk about Alfred Bucket Carter saying, "When I die, I'm going to have the best jazz funeral ever." And then at the very end, there's an account of that funeral by Matt Sacchini. You couldn't have known that.
No, I didn't,
you know,
didn't know
so
that. But I remember when I interviewed Bucket several times, and he was, I think, 78 when I first interviewed him. And he was another person who was just seen as an elder of
right.
the tradition. He'd been in the YMO since he was four.
Mm-hmm.
And he's when he said that, "When I die, I want a jazz funeral, the whole nine yards."
Yep.
That really made an impression on me. And I thought it was a good sort of a good lead in to the history, because the tradition really started with the jazz funerals, with the
yes.
funerals with music. Yeah. Yeah.
But it evolved into such an elaborate social structure, for lack of a better word. And you kind of take that apart in so many ways. Like you have this wonderful essay on the finery. I just want you to talk about the shoes for a minute, because the shoes are spectacular.
The shoes really are. As one person said, they're the first thing you see when you come out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the people, when they first come out the door, they stick their leg out and show off those shoes.
Yep.
And so a lot of the clubs insist on using alligator, which mm-hmm. is, you know, appropriate for our city.
Our place.
Yeah. But it is also one of the more expensive materials that you can use for shoes. And a lot of the shoes are not made here. They're made in either Italy or Spain. There are several really...
I was impressed by that.
Yeah. Those shoes can cost $1,000 or more.
Wow.
They're amazing. Yeah. And they're incredible.
And then there are the things they carry.
The decorations, they
the
call
them. The fabulous
decorations. Fabulous decorations, yes. Back in the very beginning of the parades, people carried canes that mm-hmm. they would maybe wrap some ribbons around, baskets, like little Easter baskets, and they would decorate them and have, you know, maybe cigars or little dolls or something to give to the people on the side, and fans. And, of course, fans were very prevalent in the churches. Well, the decorations of today are elaborations on those themes.
Mm-hmm.
The fans now are enormous affairs with ostrich feathers that are, you know, beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, wild colors. And they wave them around as they dance. It's really a sight to behold. The canes have evolved into something you'd never know was a cane. But
I was surprised to see they were still called canes when they became those like little boxes on legs, practically.
Yes, yes. And there's one fella from the old and new style fellas that likes to have a cane that has something, a little container in the top where he can put his beer can.
Brilliant.
Yes. And then baskets, too, have evolved. You wouldn't ever know, you know, sometimes you don't know whether it's a basket or a cane.
Right.
I sometimes have to ask them, except now I've learned which clubs call it which.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all through this book, in addition to, you know, the surface beauty of it all and the revelry of that time on the streets, you show us over and over again the theme of community and how these members and organizations care for each other and the people where they live. So it's a story of love and joy on so many levels.
Absolutely.
Was it deeper than you thought, or did you always think it would be there?
Much deeper than I thought. Yes. Well, you know, the social aid and pleasure clubs, they started out, they grew from the benevolent associations whose purpose was to take care of the members, to help them with medical costs and burial costs. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the jazz funerals come in. But they were self-help, community help organizations, and many of them still, they don't all call themselves social aid and pleasure clubs anymore. A lot of them say social and pleasure, but they still help each other in times of
trouble
and sorrow. Yes.
So how do you feel about the future of second lining after this long time without it?
I can say that I'm optimistic about it. There has been a parade. There was a traditional parade on Father's Day that was put on by a club called The Perfect Gentleman. They have another real second line parade, but they put on this Father's Day parade, and they didn't dress up much for the Father's Day parade. Mm-hmm. It was too hot, and so it was sort of a secondary parade. But they were able to get it together.
Get on
and
the streets.
have get out on the streets for Father's Day. And they didn't do a traditional parade of, you know, coming out and then going off down the street and only stopping briefly. Mm-hmm. They came out of a house, went to Shakespeare Park, or A.L. Davis Park now, and they just paused there for a long time. But what they did was that allowed everybody that had wanted to come to see the parade to see each other. It was like a big reunion.
Oh, what a lovely feeling that
must have been. Yes, it was really nice. Yeah.
Well, one of the things we haven't talked about is the list, the profiles of all the organizations in this book. This is an invaluable reference book.
Well, that was
activity.
What I was hoping.
What a lot of work.
I really wanted it to be a sort of a document of the tradition, both the history and the current practices, and talking about the finery and talking about the dancing and the music, but then also to talk about the clubs as they are today.
And I think it's lovely that you're making sure each club gets a copy of the book to have as well.
Three copies, actually.
Three
copies. Well, that was, I insisted on one copy, but then the HNOC decided, you know, to be somewhat more generous than that and to give each club three copies, which
that's
I think
really
is great.
Lovely.
Great, yeah.
So what's the response been from them to you?
They seem to love it. As a matter of fact, I have been handing out the books because since I knew so many of them and they had been to my house to pick up photos before, we thought that would be an easy way to do it. And so I was contacting them and saying, I have books for you. Then I began to get phone calls from some of them saying, I hear you have copies of the book for us and we love it. Can we come get them?
Oh, so I think you've
actually
been the book fairy for a while.
I have. Kevin Dunn, who is one of the master fabricators of the decorations, came and got his copy of the book yesterday. He called me.
See, this book should live forever. We've been talking with Judy Cooper, whose beautiful new book is Dancing in the Streets, Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs of New Orleans. Judy, thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Here in New Orleans, the last day to cast your vote is coming up. One Book, One New Orleans has narrowed down the shortlist for 2022, and readers are invited to vote for their selections by Sunday, July 25th. The choices are I Am New Orleans, edited by Kalamu Yassalam, The Big Door Prize by M.O. Walsh, and I Feel to Believe by Jarvis DeBerry. Check out the One Book, One New Orleans Facebook page. Three New Orleans poets, Gina Ferrara, author of The Weight of the Ripened, Jonathan Klein, author of The Wisdom of Ashes, and Paris Hughes, author of All the Words in Between, will share their latest work, poetry created during the pandemic, Monday, July 26th at 6, via video conference online. Visit the Jefferson Parish Library at jplibrary.net for more details. Jason Krupa discusses his book, All Things Must Pass Away, Harrison, Clapton, and Other Assorted Love Songs, co-authored with Kenneth Womack, Monday, July 26th at 6 at Octavia Books. Andrew Baker discusses his book, To Poison a Nation, The Murder of Robert Charles and the Rise of Jim Crow Policing in America, with archivist Greg Osborne, Tuesday, July 27th at 6 at Octavia Books. Ricky Riccardi discusses in Signs Heart Full of Rhythm, The Big Band Years of Louis Armstrong, in conversation with Maxine Gordon, author of Sophisticated Giant, The Life and Legacy of Dexter Gordon, Thursday, July 29th at 5 at Octavia Books. And coming up, the Jefferson Parish Library's Comic Con, a comic book mini convention that focuses on superheroes and comic book culture for kids and teens, takes place from 10 to 1 Saturday, August 14th at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Costumes and cosplay are encouraged. The event will feature the following components: how to draw workshops with Mike Artell and Samantha Helenas, a superhero training academy for kids, crafts, a photo booth, a Marvel movie scavenger hunt, face painters, and trivia. And it's all free. Registration is not required. Check out jplibrary.net for more info. In Baton Rouge, the East Baton Rouge Public Library announces the return of the Recycled Reads Book Sale, Saturday, July 31st from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 3434 North Boulevard. Masks are encouraged and the sale is cash only. The East Baton Rouge Public Library Main Library at Goodwood hosts a Walk Down the Memory Aisle event with author Julie Sternberg, author of Like Pickle Juice on a Cookie and Summer of Secrets, Sunday, August 1st at 3 p.m. The event also features exhibits about the Godshaw's department stores. Funding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.